Nathan Fraser Show, episode number 70, Chaos is a Ladder, or How to Profit in Turbulent Times. All right, here we go.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this, Marge. $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handy Car's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
And we're back, Free Market Squad, in the place to be. Thank you for taking a half hour out of your week to hang with me. I am your host with the Hero Complex, the High Priest of Propaganda, Nathan Fraser. This is the Nathan Fraser Show, but you, more importantly, you are the Free Market Squad. Again, thank you for taking this time out of your busy schedule to kick it with me. I guarantee I will make it well worth your while. Before we jump in to today's content, topic, whatever we're going to be talking about. Really quick, I want to give a shout out to Truth Frequency Radio Network, UCY.TV, LRN.FM, and any other networks out there picking up and broadcasting this propaganda. Much love. I do appreciate it. And of course, thank you to you for taking the time to tune in. So let's just jump into it. All right. Chaos is a Ladder, How to Succeed in Turbulent Times. So the Freemasons have this saying. It is Ordo Ab Chao, and basically it means order out of chaos. And there's a couple different ways to interpret this meaning. Some people interpret it as finding order in chaos. Other people interpret it as using chaos to create order. We're going to kind of cover both aspects in this episode. And I'm going to give my interpretation or my feelings on both sides. And then we're going to relate it to all the craziness that's going on. I'm recording this August 12th. It's my birthday. And instead of celebrating, I'm recording a podcast. What a fucking loser. I'm going to right now, if you're listening to this anytime near August 12th, 2017, you're seeing all the craziness going on between Antifa protesters and Confederate protesters and people running each other over with cars and Black Lives Matter and White Lives Matter and all this craziness, just absolute insanity out there. We're going to talk about that, and we're going to tie it all back into a business lesson at the end of the episode. So stick around because it is going to be fire. All right. So focus on freedom this week. Focus on freedom. I'm going to talk about a couple different things. I'm going to start with a poem from a novel called The Brothers Karamazov. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's a novel from 1880, back in the day, way back in the day. And inside the novel, there was a poem called The Grand Inquisitor. And The Grand Inquisitor is, you can look it up on like Wiki or wherever you want to look it up, but I'm just going to give you the gist of what the concept of The Grand Inquisitor is. So in The Grand Inquisitor, Jesus comes back during the Inquisition and he's jailed and sentenced to be burned for performing miracles. The jailer is somebody from the church. Obviously, the Inquisition was going through and murdering everybody who didn't follow or adhere to the doctrine of the Catholic Church at the time. The Inquisitor, the jailer, tells him that the church has left the teachings of Jesus, and now they follow Satan because Jesus came to set people free, and the church realized that people can't be trusted with freedom, and Satan keeps them in line until they die. And he tells Jesus that Jesus should have been a dictator rather than a chain breaker. He tells Jesus that people can't be trusted with freedom, and so the church now, instead of setting people free and following the example of Jesus, now the church is going to rule over people and dominate people, and that is the new doctrine of the church. And the point of the whole story was that Jesus was wrong for setting people free. That really the right aspect was that Jesus should have succumbed to Satan's offers on the hilltop when Satan offered to give Jesus the kingdoms of the earth. Jesus should have taken that offer, and instead of letting people be free, instead of dying for their sins and letting them be sovereign entities over themselves, that Jesus should have taken the offer and should have became the ruler of the entire world. And since he didn't do it, the Catholic Church is going to do it. And since they no longer follow him, and since what he teaches goes against what they're going to be doing, they're going to have to burn him. That's kind of the gist. But the main point is people can't be trusted with freedom. Another big advocate of this position is Thomas Hobbes. Thomas Hobbes wrote The Leviathan. In The Leviathan, he talked about social construct theory. He talked about man in his natural state would regress to a war of all against all, that people can't be trusted without government, because without rulers, without dictators, people will just be at each other's throats, will be murdering each other. It'll be total absolute chaos, and nothing will get done, and we'll just be in a constant war of all against all. And so therefore we need the social contract, and we need government, because man just cannot handle freedom, and man degrades into chaos whenever there's not a strong authority figure ruling over them. Now, I disagree with this point of view, and I'm going to get into why a little bit more here in a moment. But first of all, I'm going to point out the fact that there is countering points of view. There are authors that take a different point of view, and one of which is a lady named Rebecca Solnit. Now, I don't really like most of what she's written. In fact, I vehemently and adamantly disagree with a lot of the things that she has written, but she did write a book called Paradise Built in Hell. And this book is actually pretty decent. And it goes through multiple examples of when people during a time of tragedy, of disaster, people will come together and help each other out. Some of the examples, I don't know if she gives this one in particular in the book, but I remember 9/11 specifically, tons of people coming together to help out the victims of 9/11. There was that giant tsunami and an earthquake that followed very quickly after that on the other side of the world. I can't remember where it was at. I want to say like Indonesia or some third world country, where people just donated millions of dollars to help the people of that. You also see this you can see this in videos all the time, where people will put their necks on the line to save perfect strangers. Somebody gets in a car wreck and 15 people driving by on the highway will pull over to flip the car over and save the person. Dogs getting trapped in a pond and somebody risks their own life to go out there and save the animal. So for every instance of people looting and rioting when society breaks down or when a natural disaster happens to strike, there's usually 5 to 10 instances of people coming together, rallying together to help each other out, to save somebody, to put their own skin on the line to save somebody else. A lot of times people that they don't even know. So I'm not really as pessimistic as Hobbes or as the Inquisitor in the story of the Grand Inquisitor. I don't really see people as negatively as some of the critics of mankind might. I actually am. Most of the people that I know are more than willing to go out of their way to help somebody out if they really need help. Yes, people are self-centered, but people also understand that we have to be there for each other. And people, especially, as a marketer and as somebody who's written for pledge drives and stuff like that in the past. I know how easy it is when you know which heartstrings to pull, how easy it is to get people to pony up, to man up and take the right action to help people out. So it's been my experience that, yeah, there are some dirtbags in society that will use a crisis to their own advantage, but most people, and I would even say probably the overwhelming majority of people, are decent people and will come to the aid of others in a time of need. That's just, I mean, yes, we have selfish aspects of our nature, but overall, we're a very giving species. It's just kind of, it's something that I think gets ignored by Thomas Hobbes. It's something that I think gets ignored in works like the Grand Inquisitor. But anyways, the point is Rebecca Solnit, Paradise Built in Hell, has multiple examples of people coming together and selflessly helping out people, a lot of times people that they don't even know, just because it was the right thing to do. And that's another aspect of human nature that gets completely ignored by authoritarians. But anyways, back to Thomas Hobbes. Thomas Hobbes wrote that without government, humanity, society would break down and we would be in a constant war of all against all. Everybody would be at war with each other. And he said, freedom brings a war of all against all. It's man's natural state to be at war with every other man. And I don't really think that freedom is what brings the war of all against all. I think that government is what brings the war of all against all, because government gains power from conflict. Whenever there's shit popping off, government has an excuse to roll out tanks, to roll out police and riot gear, to justify spending on Bearcats and spending on bulletproof vests and semi-automatic and automatic rifles for police departments. Chaos and people at each other's throats is a great thing for an authoritarian leader, because it's a justification for more power, for more power grabs. Government gains power from conflict, and they encourage conflict. Also, government gives people a legal way to oppress each other. Government gives people a way to break down into group identity and pass laws to oppress people of other identities, of other groups. And that also leads to conflict, especially now if you look at all the identity politics going on recently. Black people saying, oh, white people this, this, and this. And white people saying, oh, black people this, this, and this. And Christians saying Muslims this, this, and this. And atheists saying Christians this, this, and this. And everybody wanting to pass laws to favor their group and to oppress every other group. And some of it's done defensively, but the majority of it is done out of spite and out of lust to control other people. So really, by setting people against each other, by dividing people up into groups, by passing laws that benefit one group of people at the expense of another group of people, really government is what leads to the war of all against all. You've got women against men. You've got black people against white people. You've got Christians against Muslims. You've got atheists against Christians. You've got left versus right. And right now, in this exact moment in time, it seems like it's at like a fever pitch. And it's kind of scary because, at least for me, because historically, when people have gotten into this crazy mode of everybody against everybody, that's when the perfect time for an authoritarian to step in and just take control of the situation presents itself. And I'm going to make a reference to one of my guilty pleasures. I watch Game of Thrones. I read the books and I love the books. I'm not such a big fan of the show, but it does have a lot of human nature, and it has a lot of evidence that that power and government is usually sought out by the people that are least the least qualified people for the cause. And it's got a lot of good political subterfuge in there. So I do like the show. And there was a quote by Littlefinger, and he was talking about chaos is a ladder, about how when people are fighting, when most people are just struggling to stay alive, that's the perfect opportunity for smart people to climb the ladder and to be able to emerge from the chaos and seize order. Again, going back, hearkening back to order out of chaos. Now, another thing that should be noted is in the show, Littlefinger actually causes a bunch of the chaos. He plots assassinations. He gets people to do his dirty work for him. He creates all these different uprisings in the Seven Kingdoms. And it's very telling of kind of the current day, where we see the media pushing all these different racist agendas and pushing all these different diversionary tactics. And when we see politicians blatantly labeling the other side as the other, the enemies. When we see education and how education has divided people up into these different little groups and pit them all at war with each other. If your goal is to have chaos, and your goal is to be able to use that chaos in order to establish the order where your authoritarian reign can come in, it makes sense to cause that chaos, to create that chaos. So not only do you benefit off of it, it makes sense to cause more of it. And that's why I say, again, government is freedom is not what causes the war of all against all. Government, more often than not, people in power, people who want control, it's in their best interest to create and cause that strife and cause that war of all against all in order to justify their excessive power grabs. And Littlefinger perfectly in the show Game of Thrones, Littlefinger, the character, perfectly exemplifies what I think is definitely going on. Like I said, at a fever pitch right now. I think that the media, the elites in academia, the cultural Marxists, the people in higher, the ivory towers of academia, and the higher ups in the political world, I think that they're, the result that we're seeing on the streets right now is exactly what they've wanted and exactly what they've been pushing for. And like idiotic sheep, we have gone to the slaughterhouse exactly as they've led us, which is quite disappointing. But anyways, order out of chaos. Most people want stability. When times are hectic, typically, people will submit to anybody who promises tranquility. When there's a storm, anybody that offers a shelter will be flocked around. The more chaotic, the more turbulent the times, the more authoritarian leadership people will submit to. This is how things like the New Deal got passed. This is how people like Hitler come into power. People are afraid, times are turbulent. The storm is hectic, and anybody who offers the promise of shelter will be, like I said, they'll be flocked to. So how does this all tie into business? Well, the marketplace is constantly chaotic. It's always chaos. Whether it's economic upheaval and downturns and the craziness of recessions and depressions, or even if it's just like a disruptive product comes into place or disruptive technology comes into place and shakes up the marketplace. When that happens, people are scared. People are afraid. Am I going to lose my job? Is my company going to go out of business? Am I going to lose my 401k? Is my career going to be replaced with a robot? During those times, people are looking for leaders who are willing to take a stand. People are looking for I don't want to say authorities, but in a way, they're looking for authorities. They're looking for people who have answers. And even if those answers are proven to be wrong in the long run, people will still flock to anybody who says, hey, I have the answer. I have this hill, and I'm planting my flag right here, and this is what I believe, and I firmly stand behind it. And not everybody will agree with you, but a lot of people will say, well, I don't know, but it seems to make sense, and they'll flock to you. During times of chaos, during times of turbulence, anybody who can explain clearly what their why is, why we're in business, why we do the things that we do, why, what our reason for being is. These are our values. These are what we stand for. These are what we stand against. If you, as a business leader, can do that, you'll not only have your core group of people, your team, your employees, your investors, whoever it may be, not only those people, the people inside of your business, not only will they rally behind you, but the customers, the marketplace as a whole will also. If you can clearly explain what your why is, what your reason for being is, what your values are, who the villains are that you stand against, then the customers, the marketplace, not the entire marketplace, but a good section that you're the right fit for, they will also rally behind you. Because again, like I said, if in the chaos of the marketplace, whether it's economic downturns or whether it's just the everyday normal chaos of the marketplace, if you're the one person willing to take a stand and plant your flag in the ground and say, this is where we stand, people will rally behind you. It's just part of our nature. We want that tranquility. We want that civility. We want the person giving us the easy answers. We want the person that we can look at them and we can say, I see where he stands and I agree with that. And I'm going to stand behind him, or I'm going to stand behind her. So one of the things that just drives me insane with Facebook marketing and Facebook marketers is these stupid questions that they ask to get false engagement from their audience. These questions like, do you like coffee or tea, or vanilla ice cream or chocolate ice cream? And they post these stupid questions because it gets engagement. It gets people, you know, people are always happy to throw in their own two cents. And that engagement helps push their other posts into these people's timelines. And that's fine and dandy. But if you're trying to establish yourself as a leader and all you're doing is asking stupid, vague questions that kind of make you look wishy-washy, It makes you look like, instead of being somebody who's willing to plant a flag, it makes you look at like you're somebody who's just trying to check which way the wind is blowing. Like, what do you care if I like tea or coffee? Is it going to change your opinion? Are you a wishy-washy type person? If all you're doing is asking, if you're a leader, obviously getting feedback from people is important. So asking questions that are actually pertinent to the development of your business or your product or your service, that's all good. But when all you do is constantly just ask people their feedback, not so good. It makes you look like somebody who isn't willing to take a firm stand. It makes you look like somebody who doesn't have the confidence to make bold, brash statements. It makes you look like somebody who's not a leader. And so by these people that are on Facebook and Twitter and they try to get engagement by asking these stupid questions, it's really toxic. It's poisonous for their positioning of themselves as a leader, because it makes them look like they're not competent to lead. Ben Settle, one of my buddies on Facebook and one of my marketing buddies, he always says, in direct correlation or response to asking relevant questions to your marketplace, even asking for feedback, he always says, why would you ask the deer how it would like to be hunted? So even asking your customers survey questions, you got to be careful about it, because it could go terribly wrong. That's why I'm a fan of market feedback. Instead of asking people would you like me to sell you this way? Or would you like me to sell you this way? I'm just like, hey, I'm going to put it out there. I'm going to put a price tag on it. I'm going to put a compelling message behind it. If you respond to it, if you give me your money, that's the feedback that I want. If you don't give me your money, that's not the feedback that I want, but I'll take that over a Survey Monkey poll any day. So that's kind of the gist of this week's show. Is this is the thing. When the market is chaotic, when the world is chaotic, this goes back to, this is a lesson that you can learn from the politicians and from the authoritarians of the world, because yeah, they use human nature to position themselves up in authoritarian roles, but it is human nature, and it's good to understand human nature, especially if you're trying to compete in the marketplace. When the market is in chaos, be bold, be certain. Don't be afraid to plant your flag. Don't just go whichever way the wind is blowing, because if you go whichever way the wind is blowing, the wind changes directions. You'll be chasing your tail around and around and around, and you'll never actually get anywhere of any kind of substance. When you're willing to take a stand, when you're willing to say, this is how I feel and this is where I stand, that kind of confidence is magnetic. That's the kind of confidence that people will rally behind. And if you can get people to rally behind you, you can get people to rally behind your business. And if you're the only business that's willing to take that confident stand, more likely than not, you're going to be the business that the marketplace decides to rally behind. So chaos is a ladder. Make sure that when it's chaotic out there, you're not being taken under by the tidal wave, but you're actually climbing to the top of the mountain. This is the Nathan Frazier Show. I'm Nathan Frazier. I am out of here. Faith in each other, not in authority. Be your own boss. Deuces.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
And just for a little bit of post-podcast fun, here is that conversation between Varys and Littlefinger in the Game of Thrones episode where they're talking about how chaos is a ladder.
1,000 blades taken from the hands of Aegon's fallen enemies, forged in the fiery breath of Beleriand the Dread.
There aren't 1,000 blades. There aren't even 200. I've counted.
I'm sure you have.
Ugly old thing.
Yet it has a certain appeal.
The Lysa Arryn of Jazz. Shame you had to settle for your second choice.
Early days, my friend. It is flattery, really. You feeling such dread at the prospect of me getting what I want.
Thwarting you has never been my primary ambition, I promise you. Although, who doesn't like to see their friends fail now and then?
You're so right. For instance, when I thwarted your plan to give Sansa Stark to the Tyrells, if, I'm going to be honest, I did feel an unmistakable sense of enjoyment there. But your confidant, the one who fed you information about my plans, the one you swore to protect, you didn't bring her any enjoyment. And she didn't bring me any enjoyment. She was a bad investment on my part. Luckily, I have a friend who wants to try something new. Something daring. And he was so grateful to me for providing this fresh experience.
I did what I did for the good of the realm.
The realm? Do you know what the realm is? It's the 1,000 blades of Aegon's enemies. A story we agree to tell each other over and over till we forget that it's a lie.
But what do we have left once we abandon the lie? Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all.
Chaos isn't a pit.
Chaos's old ladder. Many who try to climb it fail, never get to try again. The fall breaks them. And some are given a chance to climb, but they refuse. They cling to the realm, or the gods, or love. Illusions. Only the ladder is real. The climb is all there is.
All right, Free Market Squad, I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm out of here. Deuces.